welcome back. I am sitting here with Christopher Peacock, who is a practitioner of Chinese medicine with a focus in treating the LGBTQ community. And so I wanted to have him in today because there are some very specific issues I'd like to talk to him about. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jill. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you on the show. I know that you have a particular focus in supporting people who are transgender. And I think that they sometimes slip through the cracks in the medical community. Even well-meaning doctors don't necessarily serve the transgender community particularly well, just because they don't necessarily know how to. And so I want to have you in because of that specialty and to talk to you a little bit about what the needs are of the transgender community when it comes to medicine.
Really interesting topic, Jill. When we talk about the transgender community and serving that population well, I think the most important thing to consider is terms of cultural competency.
And what does that mean, cultural competency?
Well, what it means is when we're talking to transgender people, it's very important to address people by specific pronouns, pronouns that are self-driven and self-chosen. I think the first thing that we have to do is lay down terminology.
So when you say self-driven and self-chosen, that means we should ask people what they want to be called.
Yeah. Well, the only prerequisite for being transgender is just the identity of saying you're transgender. So it's self-report. And the term transgender basically only means that the gender you were assigned at birth isn't congruent with the gender you're currently identifying with.
So it doesn't mean someone who's had gender reassignment surgery, just self-identifying as not identifying with the gender you were born.
That's exactly right, Jill.
Yeah.
And by which I think you're saying that by identifying as transgender, we can't make assumptions about anatomy, first of all. So a transgender person who hasn't had any gender-affirming procedures or who isn't taking any gender-affirming medications isn't any more or less transgender than somebody who is.
This is actually why I wanted to talk to you about this, because I think even very well-meaning people with open hearts get nervous about the subject because it's a little bit confusing, isn't it? If you don't know much about it, should I call someone she or he? And I like the idea that you just ask them. That makes it simple, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, you just ask them. And, you know, it becomes a bit of a precarious situation asking somebody about their gender. You know, we're taught that it's not polite to inquire about what somebody wants to be called.
But that is actually what we should do, isn't it? Say, would you prefer me to address you as he or she?
That's exactly it. He, him, his, she, her, hers, or even a gender-neutral pronoun like they, them, theirs. Gender-neutral pronouns are becoming increasingly relevant, and a lot of people are choosing them.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It just takes the issue off the table altogether.
Sure.
Now, transgender people have some health concerns that are just the same as all of us, don't they?
Absolutely.
And then some that are very specific to them. What is specific to the transgender community that we need to be aware of as healthcare practitioners, you and I?
Well, first and foremost, the issue of emotional health. In one survey in 2011, it was reported that 41% of people that identify as transgender have attempted suicide. And that's a huge, huge proportion. That's 4 out of 10 people. So
that's very worrying, isn't it?
It is very worrying. And we as a society are part of that problem. And so conversations like this, I think, are the first step to addressing that problem.
Well, absolutely. It's why I wanted to talk to you, actually, because I wanted to reach a broad audience with this kind of issue. Because really, what's happening, isn't it, is that transgender people are feeling misunderstood. And that's what's reflected in that high attempted suicide rate, is that they're feeling misunderstood and like they don't have a place. And a lot of that just comes from people's lack of experience, probably.
Absolutely. And in terms of healthcare practitioners, I like to advise all healthcare practitioners to have an intake form that allows people to choose their own gender expression. You know, the little box where you check male and female is really no longer applicable. And honestly, I think the best way to go about it is to have a blank line so people can choose their own gender expression. Lots of healthcare practitioners like to have, you know, very elaborate pull-down menus, right? Where you could choose male, female, trans man, trans woman, M to F, F to M, queer, questioning, gender nonconforming, or any number of terms. But I think the best way to go about it is blank line where patients can choose their own gender expression. And Jill, that leads me to one other point. I just want to clarify a couple of terms. When we're talking about the transgender community and gender expression, there's a few things that I like to define right off the bat, just so we're all on the same page.
I think that's really helpful.
I do too, you know, just so that we can all use the same language and use appropriate language. First of which is transgender as a term, which is simply a gender expression or a gender identity, which doesn't match the gender identity which you were assigned at birth. The second of which is trans man, which is a gender expression of male, whereas you were assigned the gender of female at birth. Trans woman, which is the opposite, a gender identity or expression of female, whereas you were assigned the gender of male at birth. And then the fourth is a term that non-transgender people typically don't use. It's cisgender. It's spelled C-I-S gender. And that's just referring to a person who's not transgender, whose gender identity and expression matches the gender that they were assigned at birth. And I think that's an important word, Jill, because if we don't use cisgender, then we tend to use words like normal, which is a really inappropriate word to use, because that's implying that transgender people are not normal, and they are.
And that's partly what's behind that high suicide attempt rate, isn't it?
That's exactly right.
Feeling of not being normal and not being right and not being accepted.
What we're trying to do
is create a climate of warmth and inclusivity. So thank you for going over all of those terms. I think they're very useful. And what kind of health problems do you treat your transgender patients for?
Right. Well, aside from the emotional health issues that I mentioned before, with feminizing hormone therapies, we tend to see things like decreased libido. With masculinizing hormone therapies, we see things like high blood pressure. We see things like hot flashes. We see things like night sweats. We see things like heat signs. Many of those symptoms and syndromes are similar to what a woman might be experiencing with menopause. This is just a cisgender woman might be experiencing with menopause. Other things that we can treat with traditional Chinese medicine, which is both of our backgrounds, are problems to do with gender-affirming surgeries, scar tissue, adhesions, things like that, anorgasmia, assuring that body parts are functioning as they should be post-surgery.
Actually, I should imagine Chinese medicine is very good for that, isn't it?
Oh, it's very good.
Which is interesting because, of course, it has its roots in ancient China where there was no gender reassignment surgery.
Right, of course.
But surgery is just surgery. And I can imagine that getting body parts to flow and work properly is something that actually we're good at. It's interesting that you're applying this very ancient medicine in a really modern way.
Sure.
Now, having said a really modern way, of course, there is nothing new under the sun, and transgender people are not a new phenomenon, are they?
No, not at all. No, transgender people have existed for as long as people have existed, with varying levels of acceptance through different societies and different cultures. Most notably, Native American culture has historically been the most accepting of transgender people, called two-spirited people in the Native American culture. Not only are they accepted, they're celebrated within Native American culture. Oh, it is a wonderful thing. It is a wonderful thing. So that's just one example, you know, of transgender identity existing in other cultures other than the one we're living in right now in mainstream society.
What's changed, though, is the access to surgery, isn't it, and hormones so that you can actually fulfill your gender expression in a very different way.
Absolutely.
Than you could. It's quite the step forward. And as you mentioned, that comes with its problems, doesn't it? Serious surgeries.
It does, yeah, very serious surgeries. And the decision to have any of these gender-affirming surgeries should be really patient-focused. There are plenty of people that have a transgender identity that choose not to have any surgeries or procedures or medications. And I just want to drive the point home that that doesn't necessarily make them any more or less transgender. And insurance companies are now beginning to cover a lot of these medical interventions, which is very exciting.
That's actually amazing, isn't it? That's a real step forward. I imagine that people like Caitlyn Jenner and Levan Cox and people like that have really helped bring the issues into new focus for a lot of people. And that must actually be helpful.
Very helpful. And, you know, I just want to mention also Chaz Bono.
Right,
who was several years ago.
Yes.
I think we're headed in the right direction in terms of visibility. You know, Caitlyn Jenner, Laverne Cox. You know, Laverne Cox recently was on the cover of Time magazine, and this was the first out transgender person to be on the cover of a major magazine when she appeared on Time magazine. Of course, since then, Caitlyn Jenner was on a major magazine cover. And this is a huge, huge victory for the transgender community in terms of visibility. And one thing I just want to bring up is that even though we have these people in the mainstream media who are transgender, which I think is ultimately a wonderful thing. Most transgender people, or I should say many transgender people in the world, don't have the resources that these celebrity transgender people have to undergo gender affirming procedures. They're going to aid in transition.
Well, it's very expensive, and you did mention that insurance is covering it a little bit more, but I imagine it's relatively rare still, and that a lot of it has to come out of pocket. So when someone has had reassignment surgery, they have very specific medical needs after that, don't they? They
Yes.
have some gynecological, maybe some urological needs. It's a bit of a mixed bag.
It is.
And I wondered how you address that and how you advise people to address that through conventional medicine.
Well, that's a really, really great question. I think one thing that clinicians especially need to understand is that just because somebody has had gender reassignment surgery, or as I like to say, gender affirming surgery, is that, for instance, a trans woman who has had all the surgeries she's going to have in her life to affirm her gender still has a prostate gland.
So, and that mustn't be forgotten.
No, it certainly mustn't be forgotten, you know. And also on the other side of the coin, trans men who are living as a trans man and have a male gender identity may still have ovaries, a uterus, etc.
It interests me just because I realize that preventative care becomes very important and that things can get forgotten easily. And I can imagine it's easy to forget you've got a prostate when you've had your gender-affirming surgery.
Sure.
But someone needs to remember.
Yes, exactly.
And check you for prostate cancer and things like that. And what we're talking about is just very individualized care, aren't we?
Absolutely.
What else would you like people to know about this community?
Well, Jill, I think the most important thing to consider when we're talking about the transgender community, and you know, this comes up in all conversations that I have about this, and that's to make sure that we understand that we're not talking about a community that is outside of our own community, by which I mean these transgender people that we're talking about are our friends. They are our siblings, our cousins, sometimes our parents, our spouses. So, you know, these are people within our lives that we care for.
So it's not a nebulous concept of community, is it? These are people. So you have this long experience with this community. What have you learned?
So one thing I've learned in working with this population, Jill, is that emphasis isn't always on what we call passing privilege, by which I mean, you know, sometimes the goal of gender affirmation procedures isn't completely passing as the gender that which you identify in, you know, and I think that says something about our society and how we think about the ways that men and women should look, you know. I guess by which I mean I'm always a little bit cautious in complimenting folks about their appearance because I don't want to perpetuate the idea that women need to look a certain way.
I think it's a really interesting point, and obviously it's entirely up to you how you want to look, isn't it? And it was noticeable that when Caitlyn Jenner came out with that Vanity Fair cover, she looked very beautiful, it was very glamorous, that kind of thing. And your point really is that it doesn't always have to look like that, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. That's exactly my point.
And that's an external pressure that we would be putting on people.
It is an external pressure, absolutely. And I guess my point is that we should always be patient-focused. You know, and we should be assisting patients in their personal goals. And sometimes that's not the goal.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I think it's important. I've learned a lot from this discussion, Christopher. I've learned some appropriate language. So I thank you for that. I've learned that we should be treating people as individuals and that there are a variety of expressions of this and that we should be affirming each person's individual expression rather than trying to make them fit into a box. So, Christopher Peacock, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me about this and telling me your story and sharing your wisdom with me.
Jill, thanks so much for having me.
It's Ask UCH with Jill Blakely.